Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down the system. Pay up the exit poll. Wake up the silence.
Everybody, and welcome to the Star Chamber Show, episode 19. And tonight we got a great show for you. And I'll tell you who's ready to be a star. It's Susan Roddy, because she's going to be talking a lot tonight as one of our wonderful co-hosts along with me and Michael West. And only three
really
co-hosts. You wonder
already?
Yes, I'm calling you out already. It's going to be exciting and fun. And I've been looking forward to this one for sure. Yep. Yep.
No pressure. No pressure.
So before it's over, we're calling her Rockin' Roddy. That's what we're going to be calling. Yeah, she's going to take the show over.
Wow.
Anyway, but I've got a good one for you guys tonight because this gives a little teaser on tonight's guest who this week gets to sit in the guest chair. So, but keep your eye on the money because we're about to take a hooligan's holiday, walk on the wild side, and maybe even go out at the devil. No city boy blues for me or smoking in the boys' room because our guest tonight is a live wire who will kickstart your heart. So what do you say we get on with the show? How about that?
Nice.
There you go.
Nice.
I don't know
if this Motley Crue can handle it.
Well, this batch definitely is a true carnival of sins and capable of more than a few primal screams, I'm sure. But we're going to have a good show tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thank God I'm home sweet home for this.
Yeah. Oh, nice. But tonight,
so Taylor,
yeah.
Is it really too late for love?
Well, drawing a blank. I feel so mad. I can't even think of a good pun. That sucks.
Oh, no.
Well,
this is kind of the interesting intro because tonight I was going to let Susan step forward. We need to at least give Sayla some kind of guest intro. I mean, we can't just fling her right into the midst of things since she actually gets to be a guest tonight. So give us a formal intro.
I've done worse things to her for less. Yeah, that's true.
Go.
Okay. Putting on the professional hat. Let's see. Good evening, everybody. Our guest tonight is a 7-star author, has recently released the first novel in her Kingdom City Chronicles series entitled Old School. She is a professional costumer, a hilarious friend of mine, all-around great person, and will probably end up with the two of us in trouble before tonight is over. So I will let her implicate herself rather than doing it for her. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Sayla Janelle.
Yes.
That's
right. Awesome.
Come
sail
away with us now.
I know. I'm kind of like, hey, ask me questions or something. It's great to be
that
here.
Intro really
you know,
made me,
I, wait,
that
what?
That intro really made me feel good.
It did.
I know. Oh. Like, you got to see the doctor because you feel so good.
That's the earliest you got. We've gotten to hear from Susan in a show in a while too, so that's it's real significant.
I know,
too.
Right?
Yeah, usually when we hear from Susan, it's that like that.
Yeah, let's not jinx it, yeah.
It's not my fault that technology hates me, okay? I try. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I have people in the chat room waiting.
You really want to go for the dirty shots early, don't you?
Well, I just wish that the listening public could hear all the irate, really angry, like throw down your microphone text messages that we all get behind the scenes when the
technology
oh,
that's fabulous.
If only
yeah.
Facebook had voice.
Yeah. All right, so what y'all want to know? What are we doing? I don't have to work
now,
today. It's all on you, so.
Who are you again?
Me? Who am I? I don't know. Some chick that writes.
She just wandered in off the street and we gave her a phone.
Yeah.
On any other show, I would wonder, but on this show, I wouldn't put it past.
I know, right? You gotta do that some night.
Just take our cell phones to Borders and just start handing it to people randomly.
Yeah.
Or not
New
Borders, I guess, anymore.
Yeah.
But Barnes and Noble.
All oh, right, that would, yeah.
Here you go. Yeah, no, that would end badly. Okay, so, yeah, we're supposed to be, like, interviewing you or something, aren't we?
Yeah, something like that. If people want to know about the book and stuff, because, you know, that'd be nice.
All right, well, let's start there. Talk about the book. What is Old School?
Well, Old School is the first book, well, in a series. We're calling it cross-genre because it kind of hits a lot of different areas. There's some traditional fantasy aspects, and that takes place in a, I guess you would say, fantasy world. It's called The Realm, and the country in question, the main country that I'm dealing with right now, is actually called The Land, and Kingdom City is probably the main city in it. And so you've got the fantasy elements because you've got different creatures like trolls and ogres and elves and humans and all that stuff living together. But it also deals a lot with folklore and fairy tales. This book I kind of explain, like I've done in panel discussion and some other stuff. It's a very, very, very deconstructed Cinderella story. The main character is not human. There's, you know, no, like, ball, and it's not, like, the narrative that you would assume with Cinderella, but uses a lot of elements that take place in a lot of those stories, especially, like, some of the international versions. I took a lot of similar elements between all of those. Like, I mean, trolls actually feature in a lot of Cinderella stories, so that fit really well. I would also say it's probably pretty close to urban fantasy because it's, you know, in the fantasy world that I have, they don't really believe in magic. So, and later on in the book, it kind of starts to bleed through. So you have some of those elements and paranormal elements. There's a little bit of horror. I mean, it gets dark in a couple places, but it's all put through, like, that fairy tale and folklore filter. So it's kind of this weird concoction of stuff.
Very cool. And you mentioned that your main character is a troll, and I know
yeah,
part
yeah.
of the story already, but I think a lot of people would be interested to know, how did you come up with trolls?
I actually started writing this. It was supposed to be a short story. I had come up with the idea around 2006, and I was irritated about a situation that I was in. And for some reason, like, I got home, I was dealing with some people in a situation that weren't, like, doing as much as I thought they could be doing, you know, whether my take on the situation was the right one or not, you know, who's to say. But I really don't know why I associated myself with a troll. Like, it should have been, like, I probably should have thought of myself as the put-upon princess and the other people in question as a troll, but instead I was like, oh, I feel like a troll. I just want to, like, club someone. And, you know, I started thinking about, like, what that felt like and what if, like, a troll, like, didn't have necessarily those fighting urges. And somehow that led to me thinking about, like, trolls, like, internet trolls, and what if trolls use laptops and were, like, businessmen and all this. And the princess element kind of, the heroine element kind of came in with, like, well, if I'm the troll, then what are these other people? And it kind of got me thinking about how people assume princesses are just kind of, or heroines in these stories are just kind of there to be pretty and do their thing. I don't agree with that opinion. I could give you many examples where that's not the case. But, you know, kind of taking that popular opinion and seeing what I could do with, you know, kind of subverting the expectations of those roles.
Which is actually kind of how you came up with Nobody, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, Nobody definitely was the other, yes. Nobody is, I don't really want to give away too much. She is one of the main females in the book. She is kind of everyone's thought process in what a fairy tale heroine should be. She's, you know, this very beautiful, you know, fair girl who, you know, similar to a lot of Cinderella stories, she's run away from home. She's becomes Patalump, which is my troll and the main character of the book, his maid. It turns out she's not really a very good maid. And, you know, it sort of starts out, you think she's just really incapable. And then you start to find out that she has ulterior motives. And as the book goes on, you just learn kind of more and more about how her mind actually works. And I actually, like, at first, she kind of was like every irritation I ever had put into a character about that sort of thing. And then it kind of turned into, I just really loved to see what I could get away with her. And she just turned into this weird mix, and I love her. Like, I want to do, like, side stuff with her eventually, because she is just hilarious to me. Like, I probably shouldn't love her as much as I do, but she's a scream.
But she is. She's a lot of fun. Even as ridiculous a character as she can get at certain points in the story, she's a lot of fun, and she's still interesting no matter how bad she gets.
Yeah. Well, I think even her ridiculousness, you know, we're looking at her as a third party. She thinks she's absolutely valid in some of the views that she has. You know, she's completely convinced in her mind of her story. You know, she has this reasoning for everything. And, you know, in her mind, she is trying to make this narrative in her head happen. So it's really fascinating that she kind of thinks she's, like, the main thing. She's the put-upon martyr or the victim, and she's really not. Like, that action's, like, caused her to do some pretty amazing and incredible things. And not good things, either. Like, it's really interesting to me to get in her head. And I love that she kind of just, like, turns on a dime so fast sometimes to get her way. It's really incredible.
She seems to be kind of what a lot of society is today. I don't know if you had planned on that or not, but it really is a pretty good portrait of the way people are with their own accountability today.
I didn't really intend to make a statement of her. I think you're right. I mean, I think, you know, I did like playing with a lot of the female personalities in this, although like the main group of characters is kind of male dominated, except for like Flora and then Nobody. I really liked writing different types of women for this. I kind of, you know, I was a little hesitant because I know there's been in the past some ill feelings about, like, using women as villains in fairy tales or using, you know, showing women at not their strongest or whatever as kind of the backlash to the princess thing. But, you know, we all have different aspects to our personality. We all have dark and light aspects, you know, and I don't think it's fair to do anyone one-dimensionally. And with Nobody, I think you're right. Like, I mean, she does, like, move so fast and try to try to back up what she does, you know, and a lot of it comes out of her mouth. Like, she is very fond of, like, defending herself. So it's really interesting because I think you're right. I think especially, like, online, you know, you get these people who are just going nuts about things, whether it's, like, current events or fandom or whatever, and they'll say some really awful things about people. And, you know, in their mind, they're absolutely fine for doing that because they know how the world works, and their view is the right one. So it's, I think there is probably a little bit of that in her, you know.
Yeah, she is actually one of my favorite characters out of the book. Now, just totally randomly, didn't you tell me a couple weeks ago that at an event in the past month you had somebody actually willing to cosplay Nobody?
I think so, yes. We talked about it. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I was at EvilCon, and coincidentally, I ran into a family, well, not coincidentally, I saw them at a library event I did as well, but they actually, their daughter was part of a LARP group at EvilCon, and they were there to see her, and so I hung out with them a little bit to find her, because I hadn't seen her since she was, like, a little girl. We went to church together and stuff, so it was really, like, she's obviously grown up now, and, you know, to see her, like, she just started looking so familiar to me. I mean, besides the fact that she looks like her mom, but, I mean, so familiar, I could not place, like, where, what she reminded me of, because she was wearing, like, you know, the kind of medieval, you know, not Renaissance, but, like, fairy tale-ish fantasy garb, and it suddenly hit me, like, she looked a lot like what I had in my head for Nobody. Not exact, you know, I don't think there's ever any, like, exact, but she looked a lot. And I very hesitantly, you know, mentioned this to her mother because I was like, oh, man, this is going to come out of my mouth and it's going to sound so bad that, you know, your daughter looks like the one of the antagonists in my book. But she thought it was hilarious, and we started talking. And I think, you know, I could probably talk her into it, hopefully. Like, I would love to see that. That would make my life if that happened.
Well, see, that's like we've been talking about all along. This book definitely needs some serious cosplay. We need to find somebody who can walk around as a troll.
Well, yeah, I'm working on building that. Like, I hope by September for Imaginarium to get a Padawump costume done. I'm still, it'll depend on how fast I can build the head, but I definitely want to do that. I think Robin Blankenship, her son, has been sacrificed to the cause for the Imaginarium at least, but beyond that, we'll see. I would love to be able to have a boost role at different events that I do, and hopefully to expand that to several characters, because I think the look of this, because it's very much like a fairy tale fantasy society that's modernized. So, you know, the fashion is kind of like some of the silhouettes and stuff that you would see in fantasy, but some are more contemporary and done with, like, old-fashioned cloth. So it's a very, in my head, it's a very interesting mix of, you know, fantasy and modern stuff. So I think people could have a lot of fun cosplaying it.
I think you actually bring up something interesting there. You're talking about the different types of fabrics and things. I don't think a lot of people realize that you are actually a professional costumer with a degree in it, correct?
Well, a theater degree, yeah. But at the time that I graduated, my school didn't have emphases per se. But acting and costuming is what I know. And that's professionally, I've been working either in wardrobe or as a stitcher, or I've done some design as well since I was, like, 19. So it's been, you know, a very fairly long time. So, yeah, I mean, I've worked for operas and different theaters. I've done, like, event work, some stuff for different companies. You know, I've done a lot of different stuff. So I've really gotten a chance to kind of run the gamut, and I still really want to learn to do more stuff. I love it a lot.
I think it's interesting that you're actually taking professional skills. And, you know, a lot of people, when you think about cosplay, you're thinking about people going to the Halloween stores, you know, right after Halloween and buying up capes and different costumes and stuff like that. But it's rare to see somebody like you're talking about with the Padawump costume to actually go out and have the foam and do the molding and the painting and build it.
I will not lie. I mean, there are some cosplayers who truly are really fantastic, and I've seen, you know, people doing some really amazing stuff. I do think you have a lot of people who buy stuff online or kind of throw some stuff together, and that's fine. You know, I think cosplay is great because it helps people interact with, like, fandom, and I'm absolutely for that. I tend to get a little elitist when, you know, you have people who only buy stuff and then they want to act like they're absolutely the same as someone like me who has a degree and you know, 10, however long it is, you know, like 10, 15 years of experience, of professional experience. So I admit, like, I want to learn to mold and cast latex still. There are people who, you know, probably don't have my professional experience that are better at that than I am. You know, skill levels vary, but I definitely really am proud of my skills. And I think, yeah, I mean, I can definitely, I have the foam was in my car for the longest time, and I finally got it out. So I've got that, and I've got the fabric I want to use for the skin, and I just got to start patterning and figuring it out. So, and I'm still working out the logistics of some of it, but I'm really excited to start doing that because I think, yeah.
Yeah, we've got a comment in the chat room that I think is absolutely hilarious. I know there's a question. I'll let Stephen ask it in a minute. But Alexandra Christian actually put up there, she says, costuming is the – or cosplay is the fan fiction of costuming. And she says, I say that with the utmost respect, I swear.
Oh, God. I don't know if I can even comment that. I have seen some very, very good cosplay. But two of the guests who are also special guests at EvilCon, you know, in all fairness to them, are two of the best cosplayers I've seen in my life. I mean, they go around, I would have to look up their names, and I apologize profusely for that at the moment. I don't have that available. But they were so good, and they are literally, like, some of the best I've seen. And they have their own wig company, I think, and they do a lot of, like, this traveling around and lecturing on stuff. They were great, but I think they also are very careful from what I saw about who they portray. And, you know, it's very articulate. It's very detailed. It just is beautiful stuff. And some people are. I mean, some people, that's great. I think, you know, you have the people who are really over the top and want to, like, hand-dye the silk so they can make, you know, Padme Amidala's dress exactly. My thing is, why are you paying thousands of dollars for something you're going to wear a few times? I mean, that's great if that's your thing. But I think, you know, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like if I'm going to spend that kind of money, I'd rather do my own original work. That's kind of how I approach it. But yeah, sure. I respect people who cosplay. I just feel like if you're just buying stuff or whatever, I don't like people to come up to me, you know, trying to tell me how to make stuff. But for someone who has the skills that I don't have or who is as good as, like, the people that I saw at EvilCon, well, yeah, that's fine. I would love to have discussions with them about stuff.
Right. Now, I know there was a question in the chat room, and I have completely missed it, so who got it?
There's something
okay.
about the...
This question comes from the chat room. Hold on just a second.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, we had a rocking chat room tonight. I want to give a shout-out to Alexander
awesome.
Christian, Amy McCorkle, Robin Blankenship, the vampire Rodney Carlstrom. I mean, they are all there tonight. But the question that I think that Susan is getting at is, Sayla, do you think your knowledge of theater has helped you in your writing? That's from the chat room.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I love – one of my guilty pleasures is I love listening to people who really know how to act, talk about their craft. I love that. I tend to prefer British actors because I think their technique is really, really good. And it's different from how I was taught, too. As far as acting versus writing, I learned kind of the sense memory way of doing things where you go through these exercises and you try to find something in your life that matches up with the character. Now, now that I'm kind of further along in writing and you know, I'm not going to put my acting skills with anyone who does it professionally all the time because that's not, I mean, no. But I know when I'm beat. But, you know, I think that was some very good stuff for writing. In some ways, I don't feel like I need to write out character graphs or, you know, profiles for everything because I just know, I feel like I can kind of click through my emotional experience and find a place where I might match up with a character, or at least not match up, but, like, empathize. I saw while I was, again, guilty pleasure listening to actors talk about their craft, I saw some interview with Tom Hiddleston where he was saying, like, about compassion, and it's about trying to, like, not just feel what the other person is feeling, but, like, feel their pain, and I think I'm really trivializing it, and I'm sorry, but it was a really good explanation. I feel like in writing, too, like, it's not enough to just push your plot forward. You have to know the characters, and you have to, even if you don't agree or like where they're going, like I might feel about Nobody, I totally get why she feels that way, and I can sort of put myself in her shoes and, you know, write a better character than just trying to make her kind of a one-dimensional thing. In terms
right.
of, like, my design and costume experience, I mean, I think for visualization for stuff, it's really helped, too.
Yeah, well, I feel like the same thing because my background prior to my
yeah.
prose writing was in film and television. And,
yeah.
You know, that's what I originally went to school for and got my degree in. And I, you know, everybody always comments on how visual everything is in my mm-hmm. fiction. And it's because, you know, I think that way. You know, I think about everything as if it's the movie it's the movie in my head. And I try to make everything as detailed as I can so that everybody else is watching the same movie I am.
Absolutely. I feel like, absolutely, I mean, this old school and Kingdom State in general kind of threw me for a loop trying to, like, with a mix of kind of modernization and fairy tale fantasy stuff for a little bit. But, like, once I kind of felt that line, yeah, I mean, I want it to be detailed. I want people to see what I see. I want them to be able to walk through the streets, you know, in their head and see what's going on. I want them to hear the voices the way I hear them because they're awesome. I mean, that's why I put so much little dialogue changes in it, because it's just, I want the whole thing to just be vibrant and musical and just full of good stuff. And silence. Wow, I've killed all the hosts.
I'm just kind of distracted by the ridiculous conversation about discerning vampires and beer in the chat room. I'm not sure how they got onto this, but it's just insane.
They drink beer, they drink wine, everyone knows that.
Drink beer.
I think we actually have an agreement for Rodney to cosplay as Epic at Imaginarium, I think, in return for some beer. I think that's what they're getting at.
I don't know if I can make two trolls by Imaginarium, but if I were to have it for next Imaginarium, absolutely. I love Epic. Epic is probably, like, if I were a troll and an old man, like, Epic is very much my sense of humor. He's a little more get off your lawn than I am, but people probably don't realize my sense of humor goes to that so much. But, yeah, like, that's totally, unfortunately, if I were to, like, peg me as a character in the book, it would probably be a little bit of Flora and a lot of Epic.
Oh, and you can't leave Clyde out. He's going to get mad if you do.
Oh, well, I don't think I'm very much like Clyde. Clyde just kind of happened.
Yeah, but you have to mention
Clyde
it because you know he will take over if you don't.
Yeah, he will. He's bad. I swear, like, I'm not one of those people who, like, constantly, like, believe their characters are real, but Clyde is kind of one who's taken over. When I originally wrote this thing, this bird showed up as, like, a plot device, and I can't even, it was supposed to be some dumb joke at the end, this in the short story version, and somehow, originally this story wasn't supposed to have magic at all, and then I got a really, like, I started noticing how many fairy tale elements could also be seen as, like, Lovecraftian horror elements, like, it really is kind of disturbing, when you, like, especially in, like, the old versions, like, where Cinderella talks to, like, a birch tree, or, like, these people have, like, talking animals, and they, you know, they get killed, and they take their bones and bury them and talk to the bones and all that. Like, it's just very odd. So, in a great way. But, so Clyde happened, and so Epic gave his power up this bird so he can spy on nobody to find out what she was doing. And there's this thing in Kingdom City called answer birds, where they sort of spy on people, and they record what they say, and, you know, then report back and spill what they've heard. They aren't supposed to be sentient or, like, intelligent. And Palom finds out very fast that Clyde is very intelligent. And I'm not going to give away all of Clyde because that would be really ruining things. But he's a hoot, and I love writing him. And when I get writer's block, I may write fan fiction of him because he's awesome. I'll have to post that on my blog at some point. Like, I have, like, little stupid discussions between me and Clyde when I'm trying to work out plot points. But he also, Susan loves him because he has, I describe him as having, he went through several different stages, but what we finally ended up with is him having this kind of gruff, sexy voice, and he's kind of like a mild perv, too. So, this is, like, my take on fairy tale talking animals. You're welcome.
Clyde is beyond mild perv. He's bad.
We have another question from the chat room, and I
And it's blowing up. Crimson Heart just entered the chat room, so it's just getting crazy in there
yeah.
right now. But before it gets totally out of control, this is from Amy McCorkle. She wanted to ask Sayla, do you ever cast your characters with real people or actors in order to get a physicality for them? And I know a lot of writers do this, but there you
shut
go.
Up. Shut up. She knows you. Okay, how much do I admit to? I'm going to ask you this right now, Susan. You know the answer.
Oh, come on. Just tell it all. It'll be great.
Fine. Okay. With this one, I really couldn't do that because it's very much things are creatures. So, you know, that would be really, really hard. In general, I don't like to do that because I feel like if I get hung up too much on a look or a personality, I may change the character. I do kind of sometimes start about like a mild like avatar just to get like how a character will look in my head, but very quickly deviates into other stuff. Like I don't like to hang on to like if I was going to say like I'm going to write this story, you know, and the guy's going to look like Ewan McGregor. I'm not going to hold on to, like, all his aspects or, like, keep a picture on my desk or anything. I don't really believe in that. I tend to more, like, write stuff and then, like, think of actors who'd be great to play, you know, the characters. That being said, okay. When I was, there are two prime examples of this. Shut up! Clyde is the first, because he went through so many changes. Originally, he was more like a really foul-speaking bird. You know, the dichotomy between the cute little bird with the awful, you know, sense of humor and voice. And it didn't really work. Some of my really early beta readers were like, this reminds me of, like, that bird in Tiny Toons. I don't know. Like, and they were like, everything else is so interesting, and this is, like, the only thing you kind of ripped off. And I didn't, obviously, I don't want that. So then I thought, well, what if he's, like, Barry White or something? But the problem is you can't really refer to that kind of sound unless you, like, know who Barry White is. So in the, you know, text, because it's not related to our world at all, I can't really do that. So I somehow ended up, I was watching a lot of stuff at the time, and I noticed that, like, I was watching a lot of stuff that had Hugo Weaving in it. So somehow, and I was also watching a lot of stuff that had Liam Neeson in it. So somehow, to me, Clyde is, like, a very big amalgam of Liam Neeson and Hugo Weaving. Maybe that's just me wanting to hear them read my awful, you know, dialogue. But that it's just really funny because he talks really archaic. He doesn't use contractions. He's very elegant, but then he'll say just, like, horrible stuff once you realize what he's saying, and I love Clyde. But Padawump was the other one that, oh, God, this I hate the story. I hate admitting to this. Clyde was very much, you know, he reminded me of me when I started, and I think, like, I changed and matured faster in the time frame that I, you know, evolved this story from 2006 to now faster than he did. And in the first, like, draft I turned in, there was a point where, like, he was pretty wishy-washy all the way through, and I didn't want that. But he had to be, you know, nice, but he really never came into his own as much as I wanted, and Merida agreed with that, and there were just some problems. And he's a good character. He is one of those that I want to hug or punch in the face because he's too nice and too trusting at times. But I was really frustrated and trying to rehaul the last fourth of the book and make it work. Someone sent me, I can't remember if I stumbled upon this, because I usually listen to music when I write, but I really couldn't with this because I couldn't find anything that synced up. So I was listening to a lot of British comedies and PBS dramas and stuff to sort of keep the accents and stuff in my head. Someone sent me, I think, a YouTube clip of, like, I think it was, like, from last year, a couple years ago, when Tom Hiddleston did the Loki thing at Comic-Con. It was, like, his thing at Nerd HQ, his talk there, I think. And he was, I think someone asked him about Shakespeare, and I love Shakespearean plays, and he was talking about, like, symboling, and that was actually a I used Imogen speeches to audition for schools when I was going into college. So I love character, and I was really fascinated to hear what he had to say. And I was half listening, half trying to focus on the manuscript. And all of a sudden, it just kind of hit me that, like, oh, my God, that's what Padawump sounds like, what? What? Like, I fought it. I really fought it because I also don't like, I don't like liking actors that, like, everyone likes. Like, I'm horrible that way. I really, like, fought it because I was like, no, we're not going there. This is not, you know, you hear everyone, like, says how adorable and sweet and great he is, and I'm sure he is. Like, I'm not saying he's a serial killer or anything. I think he's probably a great person. But I think it's like, you know, people will look at someone and make up what they think a person is, especially if they're famous. You know, they sort of will fill in the blanks to suit them. And that always kind of bothers me. But then I realize that a lot of people in the book do that with Padawump. Like, they think he's nice and they think he's stupid because he kind of looks younger. They just sort of put that kind of stigma on him as well. So it really, Tom Hiddleston is not Padawump. Like, but kind of thinking those thoughts about him and listening to his voice, like, that kind of made me realize how I could use some of, like, there's something underneath the surface there with Padawump, you know, because there's obviously stuff underneath the surface of this dude. So I think it definitely helped me make him a better character. And now, unfortunately, anytime I, like, read his dialogue, it's in Tom Hiddleston's voice. And I think I even, like, use that as a cover art reference to, like, just pour him into a troll, and that's probably what the character is, and I'm never living this down, am I?
Oh, probably not.
Probably not. Yeah, I know. It's really embarrassing. I don't like
to do
that.
You just need to go ahead and admit the fact that you fell in love with him after the Velociraptor impersonation.
Oh, hell yeah. That's awesome. I mean, that sealed it for me, because my sister and I, we didn't do that. Like, she would do Gollum and, like, climb over the back of the couch and scare the crap out of me. But, like, we did stuff like that to each other all the time, like, impersonating stuff and, like, chasing each other around the house and stuff. And to, like, see a human pull off such a great Velociraptor impression, and you know me. I mean, I'm always, like, joking about how, like, Velociraptor's was, like, my favorite dinosaur ever. And, you know, it was that sealed it. That was great. Like, now I must, like, support all of his acting endeavors, because that's just sheer genius right there.
I think we have a caller on the line, don't we?
We do have a caller. And we shouldn't say who it is just yet. We'll just bring her aboard live to interact with Sayla. So our caller is on the line. You are live.
Holy crap, that thing that said unmuted really scared me. Like, I almost dropped the phone. Seriously. And I just like to, and I just like to go on record as saying that when they make a movie of the dinosaur porn, that Tom Hiddleston is totally going to play the Velociraptor hero.
Oh,
I'm just
God,
saying.
No.
You heard it here first, kid.
I would not.
I'm telling you.
I just want to say that I would not watch that. I'm sorry. There's a line. I can't do that. No. No. You may have just
not
filled it in. Thanks, Flex. No.
Well,
I couldn't do that. That's too weird.
Like,
what?
Yeah. It'll be like a rubber suit. It won't be like CGI or anything. It'll be just a rubber suit with his head sticking out of the mouth.
No. Absolutely not. No.
Yeah.
I'm just not motion this. No.
There will be like holes in the costume, I suppose. You know, if you really need that.
No, no, no. Why did you call in? What
apparently
the
they just
want?
Brought me on to embarrass you, and then, you know.
Are you not entertained?
I don't want my episode hijacked for dino porn. Let's get on track here. I'm not talking
about
that.
Oh, my God. You freaking love dino porn. You know that.
I do not. Dude, no, no. I will make fun of it. Yes. But
I'm sorry.
I don't like I cannot comprehend. You know, we're in agreement on
I
this.
Can't
there's
either.
Some things I can at least understand where people are coming from. I have no clue where people are coming from with that. That's just no. Absolutely not.
Yeah, see, and my question was totally gonna be, Sayla, what do you think about creature porn, crypto porn? But
no,
apparently I know
no.
now how you feel about it.
I don't know. No. I don't. No. Okay. Like the impression, Velociraptor impression clip, that was more like, oh, thank God there's another human being who does that and he's in power. Oh, thank God there's hope for me yet. Like, that was more what that is. That's not like me going gooey at the fact that, no. I mean, please,
yeah,
no.
I know. It's okay. I will announce it here on the Star Chamber show that Sayla is not an advocate of dinosaur porn. She's not.
Thank you.
Neither am I.
I'm not.
Neither
well,
am I.
I don't. Well, yeah. I don't feel like anything that involves monsters and stuff like that is ever. It's usually very bad for the chick involved, and I don't like exploitative stuff. So
well,
I mean,
the thing about the crypto stuff that really bothers me, and I can't believe we've gone off on this tangent. I'm so sorry.
This is it.
No,
we're bringing it back in. I'm telling you.
What?
This is. I'll give you this comment, and we're bringing it back in.
Yeah. No, the thing that bothers me the most about it, I think, is the main trope in those things is always the unwillingness of the female participant,
and that really
bothers me. So yeah, shut up. We'll stop talking about
that
for now. We're back on track.
No, it's I don't want
There are two things about it that bother me. Number one, the unwillingness of the female participant, and number two, the fact that 99% of it is female writers, which just boggles my mind.
Yeah, that is very upsetting as well. Which I can bring it back. Which is why I think it's really cool that this particular book, Old School, that Sayla has written, is a fantasy book. That is a high fantasy book. It's got high fantasy tropes in it, and it's written by a female, which is something you don't see very often, especially not with characters that are traditionally kind of grotesque. Like, trolls are usually kind of grotesque-ish, you know? So I think it's really cool that you have, that you're, as a female writer, that you are writing that sort of thing. So,
I owe a lot, this idea wasn't directly because of, like, of other things that I've seen, but, you know, I think I take inspiration from a lot of places, and I like exploring, for me personally with this group, I like exploring, like, how these creatures could relate to, you know, and have emotions and problems that we all can relate to, you know, I like that. And I have to admit, like, I loved the 1990s, maybe early 2000s miniseries Tenth Kingdom, and their trolls, while nothing remotely similar to mine, like, they were awesome. Like, they, like, loved the Bee Gees. Like, they were hilarious. And that sort of opened my mind. I can't help but think that, like, part of me was willing to go places that maybe other people wouldn't go because I had loved that series so much, like, when I was younger.
Yeah. Well, it's I've heard there are a lot of people that are kind of exploring the whole thing with trolls as not being, you know, these grotesque creatures, actually being like attractive and you know, kind of sexy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can get behind that. I'll try.
No,
you know, I'll try anything.
I'm not really a fan of like that. There is some hints of, I don't know if I would call it romance. There's some hints of, like, feeling, you know, between Flora and Powerlump, whether that will become just more friendship, whether that – I have a few ways I'm thinking of going with it. And it will determine – like, it really depends on how I'm arcing the series as a whole. But I definitely have things in mind for both of those characters. Whether it ever grows beyond their kind of close friendship, I don't know. But I do remember, I think Holly Black in one of her modern fairy tale books, I think it was Valiant, she does the romantic thing with a troll, and it was weird because I could tell, like, how, like, the description and stuff was trying to make him attractive. I never really quite got behind that. Like, I couldn't quite put myself there and be like, yeah, I see it.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I've heard that, you know, the Hobbit has kind of gotten kind of a rap about that because they're trying to make the dwarves kind of, you know, sexy with some of the, I think it's fine. I mean, you know, they're the right height, aren't they?
My thing is this, because there's a dwarf, there's a couple dwarves at the end of this book, and there's going to be a lot of dwarf fun in the next book. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait. But
Minor!
Here's the thing. Yeah, Minor, that's right. There's a dwarf heavy metal band, pretty much, and it's going to take a lot of the action in the next book. That's my take on, like, the seven dwarves, and it's going to rock. But, I feel like no matter what, I feel like the characters need to be their personality first and then whatever second. I'm not trying to make anyone more user-friendly or attractive or whatever, because they are what they are. But at the same time, I mean, that's not to say that other characters in that world would see them as attractive. I don't necessarily think the readers have to find them attractive. I don't know. I'm not really trying to pretty up anything, you know.
Absolutely. Well, okay. Well, I'm sorry. I'm just kind of like taking over the questions from Rock and Roddy over there. sorry. But, you know, I'll just keep talking. I'll just keep freaking talking. I did want to ask you, though. You said that it's kind of, the whole thing is kind of a fairy tale world and all that. Are you going to kind of borrow elements from different fairy tales as you move through the series?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so like this one that you mentioned with more Cinderella, like, will the next one be like more Sleeping Beauty or, you know, whatever?
I definitely know what I'm doing for the first four books. I think I'm going to try to do six total. This one, Cinderella is kind of easy because all in all, there are like over 300 stories that you could classify as a Cinderella narrative. You know, I could go on and be really boring about that. But there are certain elements that make that a Cinderella story. So she has like 300 different tales under her area. And unfortunately, a lot of the others don't have that many. So I'm looking at ways of combining different things. The next book, I really want to explore Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, kind of like do a sleeping maiden thing. And I kind of want to throw in maybe Rose Red a little bit too and see where that goes. I'm still plotting that one out a little bit. The third book, I really kind of am interested in going in a new direction with Bluebeard and all the creepy children fairy tales, like, you know, like the unnatural birth things, like Thumbelina and Tom Thumb, and there are a bunch of others. I've started making notes on those. I really want to do the 12 Dancing Princesses for one. I love that story. I really, plus, you know, growing up like in the 80s, I'm very partial to like the big fairy tale ballroom scenes and stuff like that, and I think this could be my cheap excuse to do that in a series of my own, so I really want to play with that.
The story that always got me, I used to have a book that was an illustrated book of Grimm fairy tales, and Thumbelina, especially like they would, you know, draw Thumbelina like she was just, you know, a princess, you know, undersized like princess.
Yeah.
But then they put all these like realistic bugs and stuff with her, and it was just like,
Well, like in general, those stories are always like, I get the pain of, I'm not trying to diminish the pain of like not having a child, because I can totally understand how horrible that would be if it's something you really, really want. But again, like putting yourself, like if I'm putting it through the filter of what horror elements kind of match up with fairy tale elements, let's just say, I mean, like they get lucky that like all these kids that grow from plants or like they take from fairyland or whatever, like they don't like have an uprising and start just like killing people. I mean, it's like you're putting a lot of trust in these unnatural things that may or may not be human to, you know, share your home with them. So I kind of want to play with that. Yeah, I know.
I thought changelings were always really creepy. Like when the fairies, and they would take the human baby and they would leave baby there.
The other version is like an effigy of Styx or something, and they transform it into like something living. Like, yeah, it's really creepy. It's very, and I want to delve into some of those elements too. Like, and then about like book five, things are going to, end of book four, book five, things are going to shift very heavily, and it's going to probably get a little more like, things are just going to explode all over the place, and I'm going to take a lot of the elements I put up before, and it's just going to be a very, I don't want to say convoluted hodgepodge, but it's going to be a lot of elements from fairy tales, but there won't be, like, specific characters or stories or narratives referenced, because now it becomes more about where is the land going from there. Books one through four. Yeah,
you could have the Pied Piper be like He Who Walks Behind the Rose, and
yeah,
the children.
Well,
the children to commit.
I, Yeah. I reference Rumpelstiltskin in this one, like, is actually in Kingdom City history. He's actually based on a couple of, like, serial killers and kidnappers. So, like, I think one is called, like, the Name Stealer and, like, Child Killer or something like that. So, yeah, and he's, like, an urban legend. So definitely, like, I work in a lot of references and don't just do things with characters. Like, there are references to a lot of things. A lot of, like, the slang or curse words are actually, you know, from fairy tales. So it was fun. Like, it's really fun for me. I think, like, even the equivalent of, like, McDonald's is called, like, the Magic Porridge Pot or the Little Porridge Pot or something after a story about this never-ending porridge pot. So...
How horrible would that
yeah.
be? A never-ending story.
I know.
Porridge pot. That would be horrible. Especially if you
it
get,
would.
Get
well, if you don't have a magic
eating
words
and
make it stop. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
There's a song to, like, start, and this, the actual story is, like, a song to start it and a song to end it, and the people always, like, forget the song to end it, so then, like, the porridge goes everywhere. There's, like, a version, I think Tommy DePaola did a version with a spaghetti pot, but, yeah, it's
yeah.
very
like
much,
like, the southern
yeah.
version could be, like, the grits pot. That'd be awesome.
There you go.
Nice. That'd be, like, butter and salt and pepper everywhere. Sorry. I digress.
That's very fun.
So, old school, is it, I mean, I didn't think it was that dark, you know? I mean, but I have
yeah.
to put this sense of humor. Do you think it'll get darker as you move through the series? Because, like, you know, Harry Potter was all light, sweetness and light in
yeah.
the first book, and then by book seven, everybody's killing each other.
I think in some ways, possibly, because of where I'm intending on carrying it. However, because it's kind of put through a self-aware filter, and it's got my sense of humor in it, I could see it going either way. I think there are parts, I mean, of old school that might, depending on the age range, I agree that I don't think there's anything particularly intense in it, but... as a whole, I mean, I think it will get towards slightly more serious territory, but, I mean, let's face it, Clyde is always going to be Clyde. Ipic's always going to be Ipic. I mean, they're always Powerwump. Well, I think he's definitely going to grow into his own and become a hero or, you know, more of his own person or troll or his self-made whatever. You know, that's far off, you know. He's always going to be a little exasperated at what's going on around him, I think. He's always going to be kind of trying to be politically correct a little bit. You know, so, and that's funny. I mean, you can't not laugh at some of this stuff. So, yes, I think it's going to get more serious, especially after book four, but, you know, because there's whole sections of the history that haven't been explained yet, and there are whole... other things that are going on that haven't really, you know, he's now got this quest that he has to go on, but he's going to discover more and more of what that's really about. So I think there are heavy elements, but I do plan on kind of balancing them out with fun stuff too. I also really want to do, like, some single stories or collections with each, and I have kind of thoughts for, like, each one. But, like, I totally also want to do, like, a poor Ipic. I want to, like, do a holiday series of, like, because there's, like, these Yuletide trolls in Iceland, so I want to have him, like, having to do, like, that duty at a mall or whatever. Or I really want to, like, put him through a bachelor competition for Valentine's Day. Like, I just want to do awful things and, like, just, like, use him to reference all the crazy stuff that happens in a city. But I don't know. It's never going to probably be, like, horrifically serious. But I think if you get attached to the characters, yeah, I mean, you're definitely going to be invested and feel stuff when things get darker and go wrong.
Right. And
yes.
It got really
quiet.
We have silence.
I know.
Well, you know, this it's fun to have a...
That was special.
Was that Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, or what was it?
Oh, no.
I don't know what that was.
That was really scary. You're just playing with the buttons now, aren't you?
Yeah. It was Grimclaw's murder coach, you know.
Yeah.
So, moving on. We've got about six
yep.
minutes left, so what else can we talk about?
Well, Stella,
know.
You could tell
what
us how to find you online so that we can buy all of your wonderful books, because you do
right
have
on.
More books than just old school.
Yeah, I do. I have a short story collection with dear Susan Roddy over here. I have That's Lost in the Shadows. I have several shorts with Mocha Memoirs Press, and one that's coming soon. My Vampire Lumberjack story is being re-released soon through them. And yeah, I'm doing all sorts of stuff. You can find me either by searching Sailor Janelle on Amazon, or my blog is sailorjanelle.wordpress.com, and that's S-E-L-A-H-J-N-E-L. So you can also on Facebook, I am facebook.com/authorSJ, and the SJ is capitalized. That's my author page, and I try to update that pretty regularly. I'm at Sailor Janelle on Twitter, and I think that's all I got at the moment. We're working on a website, but it's not going to be up yet, so...
That was a good move, not getting a Pinterest thing. Pinterest is hell. Okay, it's hell.
I'm afraid it's like as artistic and as interested, as curious about like everything as I am. Because like when I get involved in something, I want to like know everything about it and like just be at one with it. So I'm afraid like I would never leave. It would be like being sucked into like the Tron universe. But I'd be
stuck
in Pinterest.
Oh my god, I get sucked
like,
in. It's crazy. I
look
up
no way.
An hour later. Yeah.
I was thinking about doing that today. I was like, I wonder if I could use that for, like, books and stuff. And then I was like, no, I would never leave. There's no way.
But see, that's the really good part, though. See, I have boards for all my books, too. Now, I have boards for all the other things that I like, too. But, yeah, I have boards for all my books where I can put, like, pictures that inspire me. And sometimes I put, like, little quotes.
Yeah.
And then, I always put links to the books on there, too. But, I mean,
that's
what I use it for.
Okay, maybe I'll have to try that. I'm very, like, tentatively thinking about it, so we'll see.
Yeah. So, see, now we talked about social media, you know? Come on now.
Yeah.
We covered social media. We covered how to find you online. We've covered your book. Well, now we can just segue into how you and I and Susan became such good friends, because our history goes on forever and a day.
That's
a
little
silly.
Sayla,
you're going to be a guest at Imaginarium, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to be a guest. Thank you. I'm going to be a guest at Imaginarium, definitely. So if you go to that in September, I will be there. I'm also trying to get some stuff together locally as well in the southern Ohio and, like, northern Kentucky area. I haven't quite dug in on that, but I'm definitely trying to do more in the next year or so. But, yeah, Imaginarium, I will definitely be there.
Awesome.
And so will the rest of us. Yay!
Yes,
yay.
And those guys
I know
too.
People listening right now are going, holy shit, now I know, stay away from Imaginarium.
It'll
be like,
awesome,
well,
because there'll be all sorts of cool stuff.
If you have a chance to go to a panel that Sayla is on, you should go to it, because Sayla is an amazing panelist.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, yes.
And I'll even forgive you when you ditch me at that one panel.
I've only been on one show with you in, like, my entire writing career. That sucks.
And I don't just say that because I don't just say that because 90% of the panels that she's on, I'm on. So
that's true. I mean, yeah.
I remember the panel win.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I love doing panel discussions. And, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Well, see, when I'm on a panel with you, I have to fight to get, you know, something, you know, said, because I'm sitting there and, like, I'm like,
sorry,
listening to everything you're saying, and I'm like, yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm so
God, thanks. I sound far more eloquent than I really am.
How the entire radio show is for me.
Well, much like tonight, I'm sitting here listening going, yeah, yeah, that's all good stuff. Yeah, oh, I'm a host.
I appreciate that. That's really sweet. I always am kind of like deer in headlights with that stuff. I really enjoy it. And we're coming down to the wire, so I guess we should say goodnight, guys.
Yeah, we've got about 30 seconds left, so Everybody's like,
yeah,
and run out the clock.
Next week, let's get a quick promo in for Nick and Elizabeth Valentino, who are going to be our guests
Yay.
In the Star Chamber show. And then two weeks, we have Jackie Gamber. So one of these, give a quick
Woo!
Plug for that.
But yeah, definitely, if you like unusual takes on different stories, if you like any sort of fantasy, definitely check out Old School. I'd love to have reviews on it. I'd love to, you know, I'll discuss it on my Facebook page. I'll answer any questions. I'm down for talking about the book. So, yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
You're welcome.
And I guess big fun. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.